I'm Steve McLeod, and you are listening to The Community Lounge, the podcast where community managers from the video games industry tell their story, talk about the challenges they face, and share tips to help other community managers do their job better.
Today, I'm joined by Vicky Fieldhouse. Vicky is currently Senior Community Manager at Secret Mode. Notably, until a few months ago, she was a Lead Community Manager, which is actually more senior than your current position. I'm sure we'll talk about how that happened, but first, welcome to the show, Vicky.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Shall we start at the beginning? Tell me how you got into community management. I've heard this story before, bits of it, and it's a good one.
Okay, I'm glad you think so. I actually got into community management in my mid-30s, which I think is quite late to come into community management. And I'd wanted to get into games for over 10 years, I think, at that point, and just struggled and tried and failed. And yeah, I think it's only now looking back at sort of the stepping stones in the path that got me here that I realized that everything that I did was bringing me to this place. So yeah, I had like a lot of customer service experience, and I think that's a really good foundation for being a community manager, is to know how to do customer service and how to talk to players and how to talk to your customers, essentially. Then I had a ton of social media experience. I ran my own business for a little bit about 10 years ago, back when the only platforms were Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. So I became quite savvy with social media. And
So far we've got customer support, social
media. Customer support, social media. So I knew how to use the social medias. And then it wasn't till 2020 that the final missing piece sort of came into play. And as everybody pretty much did, they, like, when COVID hit, everyone started streaming on Twitch, which I never thought I'd do. So I started streaming. So I got a lot of technical experience on how to use OBS, how to do live streams, how to make video content for YouTube and TikTok. I started hanging out in Discord servers. And yeah, turns out that that's a really useful skill to have when it comes to community management. So yeah, I would say those are my three sort of building blocks and three stepping stones for community management.
And that was 2020 when you were doing the streaming. And when did you get your first job in the video game industry?
So not quite video game industry, but games related. I got my first paid position in 2020. And that was, oh no, it was 2021, sorry. So I started working for a company that makes soundscapes and sound effects for RPGs.
Okay.
So big RPGs like Dungeons and Dragons and all of that kind of stuff. They did all the official music for the tabletop role-playing games. And they were based out in Australia, so I got a completely remote role doing that.
And you're in the UK.
I'm in the UK, yeah.
I've done UK to Australia. That's like the worst possible remote work for time zones.
It's terrible, but they had people on their team who were in America, and they had one other person who was based in the UK. So it kind of worked. Like, a lot of my team that I was working directly with were in America and the UK. So that was quite nice. And it meant also that there was someone sort of overseeing the community 24/7, essentially. So the community were never left without anybody. But so I worked for them for a year. It was just a contract for a year. But I thought it was... I really got to use my streaming skills. So the reason I got that job was because I was streaming RPGs. I created my entire own thing. I don't know if you've ever heard of fighting fantasy books, like game books.
Wow. You just took me back to my childhood, like Ian Livingstone and Steve Jackson. Yeah, I loved those things.
So I've met both of them.
It's like a adventure, but you met them. Choose your own adventure, but you're all dice.
I've met them multiple times.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. I went to Fighting Fantasy Fest like a couple of years back, and Ian was like, oh my God, it's Vicky. Shall we have a photo? And I was like, how does this guy know me? And if you've ever met Ian Livingstone, he's like the most humble person. Like, he doesn't need to be. I've met him a couple of times at UK Games Expo, and he's always like, oh, it's Vicky. Hi. And he notices me he knows that I make content, or used to make content about Fighting Fantasy.
That's incredible.
So you're
doing the old Fighting Fantasy books from the 80s.
I've got like a ton of books.
And you're doing modern YouTube videos based on those old books.
So,
okay.
So what I used to do is I used to run it like D&D, because this is what I started doing in COVID with friends, as I got really into fighting fantasy. And I was like, I quite like being like the narrator, or like the dungeon master, essentially, and running my friends through these books as though they are the adventurers. And then I turned it into a show on YouTube. And I would have like a guest adventurer on every week, and I would narrate, and I would play the monsters, and I would roll for the monsters, and then they would play the adventurer and they would roll for themselves, and we would dice battle it out. And I was using, so the company that I ended up working for, I was using all of their sounds, all of their music. I was building my own like soundscapes and battle music and silly sound effects when people failed their dice rolls and eventually got killed. I used to love killing my adventurers. It was so fun. And yeah, I ended up using all of their own stuff. So I was actually using that, the advanced version, where I would build all of my own stuff, because they were offering like paid pre-made packages and I was just making all my own stuff. So when I interviewed for them, I was like, oh yeah, I know how to make all my own sound sets and I know how to do all of this. And I just sent them my YouTube link and I basically just got the job then and there. And then for them, like, that allowed me to connect with new audiences, because they hadn't really done anything on Twitch. They didn't know anything about
TikTok.
This
is the Australian soundscape.
This is the Australian, yes. So they're called Sirenscape. They're a really lovely company, really nice to work for. And they do some really cool stuff. But yeah, so I was doing that for a little while. And it, like I said, like, me being able to make TikToks and me being able to live stream on Twitch really allowed me to expand their audience and reach a new audience. I was hanging out in Discords as well, which they hadn't previously done. They were very old school. Uh-huh. They had a forum and that was it. So in terms of customer support, they weren't really reaching their audience where their audience was at. And their audience was on Twitch and their audience was on Discord, so a lot of their users hung out in those spaces. So I did a lot of custom support in like D&D specific Discord. So I would run like masterclasses on stuff like that for them and show them how to use the in-depth features if they want to make their own stuff. And yeah, it was really cool. I really enjoyed that. So that, I would say, that's game adjacent. That's not video games, but it's game adjacent. So
and you were a community manager.
I was community manager, yes. So that was my first community, like paid community role. And then, because of streaming, I got my next role, which was community ambassador at Raw Fury. And I got that again because I was streaming, and I was streaming a game called Kingdom Two Crowns, which is still one of my all-time favorite games. I feel like I'm just rambling, but I'm so happy to be rambling.
Can I interject and say that?
Yeah, of course you can.
So we had an intro call, you and I, a couple of days ago, and you mentioned to me then Kingdom Two Crowns.
Have you played
it? I wish
you
hadn't, because I then went and got it on my iPad and I haven't stopped playing it for the last 2 days.
Yay! Oh, that makes me so happy.
I mean, I have a company to run and a family to be with, but you know, this game.
You would be amazed at how many parents play Kingdom Two Crowns with their kids.
Really?
Yeah, it's so, because I think it's so child friendly in a way. Like, there's no speech, there's no dialogue, there's no like difficult controls to master. There's no, I wouldn't say it's not violent, but it's not violent in a way that you wouldn't want to expose your children to that. So you would be amazed at how many people within the community play with their children. And I love that about the community. I do miss them a lot, but. Yeah, so I was streaming that game, and again, I was having like a player too, so I would co-stream it with somebody else, another streamer. And I just got really knowledgeable about the game. Like, I think I had about 400 or 500 hours in the game before they hired me. And again, that was because I was kind of ingraining myself in their community. I was hanging out a lot on Discord and helping other players. So there's a lot of people like in their Facebook group for Kingdom, and a lot of people in their Discord would be like, oh, I'm really stuck on this bit. What does this do? Or like, how do I get past this thing? Or like, how do I progress? Or what's this for? And I'd be like, oh, I know what that is. I can just answer.
So this is before you were actually working
for Raw
Fury.
This is before I was working for them.
You were
them.
Very active in their Discord.
Super active, yes. Yeah. So super ingraining myself into their thing. And then I saw a role come up for Community Ambassador and I applied. And I always tell this story, but I didn't get it. I didn't get the job straight off. So the first time I applied, I didn't get it. But I continued to be part of the community, and I got quite friendly with their community manager at the time, who was called Fiona. And probably 2 or 3 months after I applied and didn't get it, Fiona messaged me on Twitter, now X, I never call it X, it's still Twitter to me.
And to me.
Yeah, and she just messaged and said, oh, you know, I know you applied a few months back and you didn't get it, but would you still be interested? The role is much smaller now, it's only 20 hours a week. Would you still be interested? And I was like, that's perfect. Like, I love a part-time job that I can fit around my streaming. So I could still work, and technically I was freelance, so I could still work and do my hours to fit around whatever else. Like, I could go to the gym, I could go into town for lunch, I could run my errands, I could stream in the afternoons. It was perfect. And yeah, I loved being there. And I think Raw Fury is such a great publisher. They've got so many games that just hit the mark for me. So I'm still a very big fan of Raw Fury.
Were you working remotely or in person with Raw Fury?
No, I was working remotely. So all of this time, like, both of my roles had been remote, so I hadn't really known anything else. And before that, I was self-employed. So yeah, I hadn't worked for a company, and I hadn't really been in full-time employment for a long time before that.
Okay. And now you're at Secret Mode. So
yeah.
How long have you been there?
Nearly 2 years. Yeah, I started in 2024, but I started as a lead. And I know you touched on this before. So I jumped quite a few levels. I'd gone from community ambassador working part-time at Raw Fury to jumping up into a lead position, which is quite a senior position in the company. And that, yeah, that was full-time. But I fully believed I could do it. I was confident I could do it. I loved the team. I loved Secret Mode's games. Like, I played A Little to the Left and I played Loddlenaught at that point, and I loved both of those titles. So I was really excited, and they're right here where I live. So I was like, yeah, I can walk to work if I need to. This is great.
Okay. So you said how much you love part-time work, but this was a full-time job.
Yeah.
Am I right in thinking that full-time thing, it turned out not to be exactly what you wanted?
Well, no, I mean, it was definitely a challenge. It's not that I don't want to work full-time. I don't think anyone really wants to work full-time. We'd all love to have a part-time flexible career, wouldn't we? But yeah, working full-time after being part-time and self-employed for so long. I mean, even at Raw Fury, I was technically still self-employed. So going from that into full-time employment, obviously you think, you know, stability, benefits, a salary, I don't need to pay my own taxes. So there's a lot of good benefits. But yeah, I just was so excited about what they were doing. And I was really excited to be a lead and have that position as well. So yeah, it's not that it didn't appeal to me, but ultimately I have stepped down into a more community management role. So back down from a lead into a more community management role.
So for my education and also some listeners, how do you see a difference between a senior community manager versus a lead community manager? What is the difference? In these? I mean, there is no standard definition for community manager, but at least in
how
it is for you, you can tell us.
Sure. So senior community manager is just a very experienced community manager. So I would say that even though I've not been in the industry that long, that my experience, I do have quite a lot of experience and a lot of skills that would make me senior. With a lead, it's more like a management position. There's different types of leads. You could be a principal lead as well, which just means that you still get to do the work. You are just in a more principal position. But lead for me was like a management position. You are managing a team. You're managing the everyday. You're having to chat with stakeholders a lot. You're having to chat with upper management a lot. You're not so hands-on with the community management. You don't really have time to be. And I think that's what I missed the most, was just actually just being hands-on with a game and hands-on with the community. Like, it's very much a hands-off position being a lead.
Gotcha. I understand now. So in a community manager role, even senior, you're actually doing the day-to-day work, interacting with the community.
Yeah.
I mean, at lead, at least in this situation, it was more like being a manager rather than being
doer.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's move on. I want to hear how you learned to do your job better, especially when you first started as a community manager and it was new to you, except you did find that you had a background that helped. How did you learn what to do?
Oh God, that's really tricky because I feel like I was just doing it. Like I said, I was hanging out in those spaces. I was helping other people. I was already making content off my own back for my own channels. It's just that when I got the job, I was suddenly being paid to do everything I was doing already before. So I kind of feel like it just came naturally, as horrible as that sounds, like as awful as that sounds, like it just came naturally. I think to be a community manager, you've got to have a certain sensibility. Like, you've got to want to help people, you've got to want to give value to people, you've got to want to be of value to a gaming community and be passionate about what you're doing. And for me, that was always quite natural, especially with working at Raw Fury and also working at Secret Mode as well. But I would say I'm quite picky with what I work on. Like, I don't just work on anything. I like to work on things that I am genuinely excited and passionate about, because I think that that's how I will best serve the community and that's how I will best serve the game. So in terms of like coming up with content for the game, I'm going to want to produce the best content for the game in terms of like live streams or TikToks. I'm going to want to create that because I'm passionate about it already and I'm enjoying it already. So I wouldn't say that I had to learn anything to do my job, but I am continuing to learn. So that's the key, is that you can never stop learning about community management.
Yeah, good answer. So let's say a listener has heard your story of the three key skills you developed and they're trying to do the same, and they're about to become a community manager for the first time. What would you give them as tips for the first week on the job?
Be nice. Be nice to everybody.
This is a good life tip.
Yeah, I mean, the industry is smaller than you think. Like, you think the games industry is big, right? It's small, and it's getting smaller by the day. What I've learned is, like, in my many years of interviewing and trying to get into the industry, I met a lot of people that I now work with.
Wow.
Yeah. So people who interviewed me at other studios now work with me at Secret Mode. And I'm like, when I started working, I was like, why do I know these people? I'm like, where do I know you from? And I was like, did you interview me once? So I would just say, be nice, be respectful. I'm not saying that I'm the nicest person in the world. I try to be nice to everybody, but I just think you never know who you're going to meet again, or who you're going to work for again, or who might be hiring you for your next job. Like, you know, just bear in mind that you're going to see the same people around a lot because the industry is smaller than you think. So yeah, my biggest tip is be nice.
Okay. Be nice. Well, that goes a long way. It can be interpreted in many ways, but you're so right that the industry is very insular. I've been kind of surprised by this too. You go to the two different events and you already know half the people at the second event because they're at the first event.
Yep.
Hey, listeners, a short interruption. When I'm not hosting the Community Lounge, I run Feature Upvote, a platform for managing player feedback. When you use Feature Upvote, your players can submit and upvote suggestions to improve your game in a single place. This gives you the data you need to develop a game that meets player expectations. And you can say goodbye to the confusion of trying to keep up with feedback scattered across discussions on Discord and Steam and Reddit. Learn more at featureupvote.com.
Do you have any story you can think of a memorable positive moment as a community manager?
I mean, there's loads, particularly when I was working on Kingdom Two Crowns. Like, I got so attached to that community. And when it came round to Rawcember, which is something that Raw Fury do every December, they do Rawcember every year. They do a whole sort of week or a month, or I can't remember how long it is now, but they do a load of giveaways and competitions for their community across like a range of games. So for Kingdom, I got to design and create like a whole week of competitions and giveaways, and that was a lot of fun because it really was for the fans. And you knew that the people who were going to engage with that were going to be like hardcore Kingdom Two Crowns players. And they were going to enjoy it. Like, I was like, as a player, would I enjoy this experience? Like, would I find this exciting? Yes, I would. Like, am I being asked to test my knowledge on the game? Yes, I am. I know that stuff. Like, I'm going to ace this. And then just being able to give away prizes at the end of it and be like, you know, you guys are amazing. Let's just give away all the prizes. Like, Raw Sember was all about being generous and giving. So just being able to be so involved with designing and running that was super cool. But also, like, a really big highlight for me at Secret Mode is always Cozy Quest.
Yeah, tell me about Cozy Quest. I haven't heard much about this, except that it's obviously to do with Cozy Games.
Yes. So it's an event that we do at Secret Mode every year called Cozy Quest. It's a reason why I stepped down, actually, was because I wanted to be more involved with Cozy Quest and be able to champion our Cozy Games more. And yeah, Cozy Quest is a celebration of Cozy Games, essentially. This year we had nearly 300 developers take part in our event, and we did four whole days of, we did a showcase, we did four whole days of content where we did like live streams, and developers sent us playthroughs and interviews that they'd done, and we did a panel, and then we topped it all off with an award show, which we did live. And the award show is always so fun. But yeah, it's great. And I think it's such a lot of work, but I always feel like it's really worth it, and it's so rewarding, and it's just really nice to get to throw a spotlight on Cozy Games.
So these are surely not all games being published by Secret
Mode. No.
There's so a lot of games.
It's a lot of games that are, yeah, there's most of it, like the vast majority of it, is games published by other Cozy publishers or developers, which it's always really nice to throw the spotlight on their games and give them a chance to shine and really sort of highlight the best of the best of what's coming for Cozy Games. So we do a whole sort of feature around like upcoming Cozy Games. We do hidden gems, things that have maybe not had the spotlight quite as much as they need to. But it's really great to sort of meet and chat with so many other like Cozy Game devs who are just excited to take part and that we've decided to put them in the event. And real highlight this year was we created a Cozy Quest Discord, and the devs got to sort of hang out in there and be like, oh my God, we've just had so many new wish lists because of the event. And it's been so cool, like seeing all the content. And oh my God, we just won an award in the award show. So just their excitement over it was just, it's just super rewarding. So I would say Cozy Quest is always a highlight for me every year.
I'll have to take a bigger look at that. Everybody likes winning awards, right?
Yeah, it's always really fun. And it's really fun to give awards as well. Like, it's more like, oh my God, I can't wait to see who wins. I can't wait to tell them they've won. It's really, really great fun.
Moving on, we've talked about something positive. Are there any like negative or very challenging moments that have you faced as a community manager that stand out? One of the more negative sides that I think we need to talk about from time to time.
Yeah, I think we did speak about this a little bit before we started to hit record, because I was like, I think I'm going to give you an answer that isn't the answer you're expecting. And I've watched a few of your episodes, and community managers talk about specific things within the communities they've managed, some really tough things and some really negative things. And I feel like I've been quite, I mean, touch wood, I've been quite lucky in terms of like, we haven't had anything catastrophic or where it's been like everyone sound the alarms, there's an emergency that we need to address immediately. There hasn't really been anything like that, and if there has, I've clearly repressed it. But for me, the biggest challenge was, I think we've briefly touched on, is just going from that sort of part-time, very much working on one game, one community, and working on the dev side as well. Working for a dev is very different to working for a publisher.
Tell me about the differences there.
So the challenge there, so working with a developer, you know, if a community member comes to you with a question about the game and you're like, oh gosh, I can't answer, I don't know, you can literally just get on a call to the dev and say, I've got a question, can you answer it? Easy peasy, right? The dev is one phone call away, and they can answer the question. They know everything. If I don't know, the dev will know how their game works or how their game is supposed to work. So yeah, that's really good. With a publisher, like, the dev is like a few steps away. Like, they're not quite so easy to get a hold of if you need to ask them a question about their game. And I think as well, working on multiple games. So when I worked at Royal Fury, I worked on one game and that was super easy.
Which game was that one?
That was the Kingdom Two Crowns.
Right. And yeah, the game you had already played for hundreds of hours in advance.
Exactly. So I knew it inside out. Uh-huh. So it was very rare that I needed to ask a question of like, can I just get confirmation on how that works? I think being on the publisher side and working across multiple titles, it's really hard to get to know the games inside out. And if you have got a question about the game, so it's more often that I will have a question about, is it supposed to work that way? Or does that feature, is that a feature or is that a bug? I'm not sure. It's harder to get the answer. There's a few more steps to go through before you can get to speak to a dev about that. So I think that is quite a challenge, but also, yeah, going from part-time to full-time and also going from a community management position to being a lead, that was a big challenge for me. So yeah, not really a challenge in terms of things within the community, but certainly like a professional challenge for me.
How does it make you feel as a community manager for a game when you can't quickly and easily get in touch with the person who is best place to answer or tell
you. My goodness, how does it make me feel? Well, yeah. I'm a very feelings-based person and I'm also neurodivergent, so I really want to help people all the time. I am a people pleaser. If I can't get them that answer and I can't help them, I feel awful.
Okay.
And it's almost like I have to be like really apologetic of like, oh, I'll ask, but it's going to be a few days before I can get back to you. Is that okay? Like, I always want to give them the answer now. I want to help them now. And you've got to think of it like what I think of it as that player is playing right now and they want the answer now so they can progress. Like, for example, if there's a bug and they can't progress because of this bug, they're going to stop playing the game, or they're going to, if we don't respond to them immediately, they're going to, I mean, people can get very, what is the word I'm looking for? They're not very patient. They're a bit impatient. They want you to answer
to be
right
fair
now.
Enough, to be fair enough, like a game is something you're very emotionally involved
in. Sure.
It's very hard to say, I'm just going to stop all that enjoyment right now.
Until I get an answer. Yeah, yeah, until it's fixed. Yeah, it's really difficult. And to be honest, if I was in their shoes and I'd got a game that, I mean, yeah, if I'd got a game and I was like, oh, this bug keeps getting in my way and I can't actually progress anymore, I would start to feel as though, like, oh, I'm just going to give up. I'm going to play. There's so many other games that I could be playing right now.
Yeah.
So I think for me as well, that plays into my mindset as a community manager of like, if I can't get them the answer now, if we can't get this fixed soon, people are going to stop playing and people are going to start getting a bit irate about it. So it always just makes me feel a bit crappy, to be honest, if I can't solve it for them right then and there.
So two or three episodes ago, I was talking to Dale Stifle. I think I got his surname right.
That's one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, really? I'll make sure they hear that. I think it was Dale, or was it Callum? I think it was Dale. He said he wrote to the community management team or the support team of a game, and it took them more than 60 days to answer.
What?
So all I want to say is if your answer straight away with, I don't know the answer, but I'll get back to you, and then 5 days later you have the answer, you're still doing a lot better than whatever game that was.
Okay. Phew. That's okay. But it's worse when, so there are a couple of things at the moment that we can't fix, and we can't fix them because we can't replicate them.
Oh, yeah,
so there's
hard.
A lot of people having this issue and we're like, we're struggling to replicate that. We've no idea how to get to that bug. And if we can't get to it, we can't fix it. So there's a lot of people having the same issue. We can't replicate it, which means, yeah, we can't fix it. And I don't know if or when, or if ever there will be a fix. And that's going to affect a whole community or a subset of the community playing on a certain platform for that game that, yeah, I really want to help them and I just don't think I...
So tell me, what would be a good strategy in that situation as a community manager when there is a problem that you can't replicate, you can't fix, but, you know, you still need to go on with managing the community? What would be a solution or an approach to dealing with that?
I think honesty is the best policy if you can be. Like, if you can be honest. So I do think honesty is the best policy. We did have this at Sirenscape, actually. We did have, now I've thought about it, we did have a problem. But I think honesty is the best policy. It pays off. if you can be honest.
And if this is happening to many players on one particular platform, what would you do?
I would probably just say we're struggling to replicate that right now as soon as we can. Like, if you can help us to replicate it, if you can. So a lot of the people reporting the bug have not given us the steps to replicate, essentially. They don't know how they got to the bug, and we don't know how they got to the bug. So it's a case of, if anyone has more information or can replicate it, please let us know. That would really help us. But until we can replicate it, we can't fix it. So it's just a case of being honest and know, like, players don't know what goes on behind the scenes. Players don't know that we need to be able to replicate it before we can fix it. So I think it's just a case of being honest with them and just saying, until we can replicate it, we can't fix it. Really sorry that's happening to you.
Frustrating for you, frustrating for them, but it's the best one can do. Believe it or not, we're running out of time. It has gone very, very quickly. But there is one final and very important question for you. What game have you been playing lately?
I play a lot of games. Gaming is my life. So I haven't got a quick answer for you. I've just finished a game called Winterborough. It had been on my wish list for ages.
Is that a cozy game? It sounds like a cozy game.
It's a cozy survival game. You play as a little mouse during winter and you have to survive. It's lovely. I really enjoyed it. But aside from that, I'm also playing a game called Squeakcross, which is, I can't remember what it's actually, is it a mnemonic kind of game? You've got a grid with squares and numbers, and you have to fill in the squares to make a pattern or an image. So it makes me feel very smart. Because my husband looks at the game and goes, I said to him, do you know what I'm doing? And he's like, not a clue. And I'm like, kind of just filling the square here, a square there, a square there. And he's like, yeah, not a clue. But the numbers on the sides of the grid will tell you how many squares there are and how many need to be filled. So that makes me feel really smart. I'm also addicted to a game called Everything is Crab. Everything is Crab.
Crab. Okay. Tell me about this.
It's a roguelite game where you play as a blob. It's kind of like Vampire Survivors mixed with Spore.
Okay.
So you start you start as a blob. And the more you fight and the more you eat, the more you can evolve. And it's a case of trying to evolve as quickly as possible because you're on a timer until the boss arrives. So
you're already taking me back with some of your answers today. Final Fantasy and Spore. Wow.
Yeah. And then I also play on PS5. So I'm currently playing Split Fiction with my husband. And I've just got into Jurassic World Evolution 3. So I play a lot of games.
I guess the follow-up question is, how do you find the time? Well, it's you're part-time. You're working part-time.
I'm not working part-time. I work full-time.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood. I thought that was part of the change of role. Okay, you're working full-time and you play all these games.
Yes, so I still work full-time. But it's literally all I do. So in my lunch break, I will crack open some Squeakcross or some Everything is Crab and fit it into my lunchtime if I'm working from home. And then generally in the evenings, like, I can watch TV and play a game at the same time, or I can watch my husband play a game and I can play a game at the same time. It's one of the reasons I got a Steam Deck, just so that I can sit next to him and still play a game in the evening. So he doesn't feel guilty about playing a game on PlayStation, and I don't feel guilty about playing a game on my Steam Deck, because we're both playing at the same time, essentially.
It's the modern family. It's the modern couple.
Yeah, it's pretty much all I do in my spare time is just play video games.
Wow, that's really interesting to hear. Vicky, it's all we have time for today. Thank you again for being on the show and speaking so openly and honestly. Where can listeners get in touch if they'd like to know more about what we've discussed today?
Oh my goodness. Okay, so despite being in a lot of community and social spaces, I don't really do social media anymore. I think I've hit that age where I'm trying to get off all the platforms, if I'm honest. I'm trying to spend as little amount of time on social media as possible. I hang out in a lot of Cozy Game Discords, or if you want to reach out professionally, you can find me on LinkedIn.
Okay, well, we'll have the LinkedIn profile on the show notes, but we won't have any other social media there.
Nah, I don't really use it anymore.
I wish I could get myself off social media. Okay, thank you, Vicky. Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of The Community Lounge.
If you enjoyed this episode, please spread the word and share it with friends and colleagues who you think would also enjoy it. You can find all the episodes on your favorite podcasting platform or at featureupvote.com/thecommunitylounge.